jacket on his shoulders. The gentleman was 7 feet tall, yet narrow-chested and incredibly thin, and with an insolent mouth, may I add. Berlioz's life had not prepared him well for unnatural phenomena. His eyes bulging, Berlioz paled even more and managed a single confused thought. This cannot be. Alas, it was. The tall, transparent gentleman hovered before him, swaying left and right without touching the ground. By this point, Berlioz was so overcome with horror that he shut his eyes. When he opened them again, he saw that it was all over. The haze had dissolved, the checkered man had vanished, and so had the blunt point from his heart. "What the devil!" exclaimed the editor. "You know, Ivan, I nearly had a stroke just now from all this heat. Even something like a hallucination." Berlioz attempted a chuckle, but alarm still darted in his eyes and made his hands shake. However, he eventually calmed down, fanned himself with his handkerchief, and, managing a lively, "Well then," resumed the speech interrupted by the apricot water. The speech, as it was later determined, involved Jesus Christ. Apparently, the editor had commissioned the poet to write a long anti-religious poem for the next issue of the journal. Ivan Nikolaevich managed to compose the poem in record time, but unfortunately it completely failed to please the editor. Though Homeless had painted the protagonist, that is to say Jesus, in the darkest of colours, the editor was of the opinion that the entire thing had to be rewritten. And therefore the editor was giving the poet a sort of lecture about Jesus, aiming to underscore the poet's principal mistake. It is difficult to say what exactly undermined Ivan Nikolaevich's piece, the descriptive power of his talent, or his complete ignorance of the subject. But his Jesus turned out to be a very lifelike, if unattractive, character. Berlioz, however, wanted to show the poet that the crux of the matter lay not in Jesus' nature, good or bad, but in the fact that Jesus, as a person, had never existed in the first place. That all the stories about this character were simple inventions, ordinary myths. It should be noted that the editor was a well-read man who supported his argument very skillfully with references to ancient historians. For instance, neither the famous Philo of Alexandria nor the brilliantly educated Josephus Flavius had mentioned so much as a word of Jesus' existence. Displaying profound erudition, Mikhail Alexandrovich also informed the poet, among other things, that the description of Jesus' execution in Book 15, Chapter 44 of Tacitus' famous Annals was nothing more than a later insertion and a forgery. Everything the editor now described was new to the poet, who listened alertly. His spirited green eyes were fixed on Mikhail Alexandrovich, and only occasionally would he hiccup and quietly curse the apricot water. "As a rule, there isn't a single Eastern religion," Berlioz was saying, "that doesn't involve a virgin begetting a god. Failing to invent anything original, the Christians created their Jesus in an identical manner. Jesus, who never actually lived. That is precisely where the main emphasis should be." Berlioz's high tenor carried through the deserted alley, and as Mikhail Alexandrovich ventured further and further into the sort of jungle where only a highly educated man can survive, the poet learned volumes of interesting and useful information about the benevolent Egyptian god Osiris, son of heaven and earth, about the Phoenician god Thammuz, about Marduk, even about the lesser-known but menacing god Huitzilopochtli, once greatly revered by the Mexican Aztecs. And just as Mikhail Alexandrovich was describing to the poet how the Aztecs fashioned likenesses of Huitzilopochtli out of dough, the first man appeared in the alley. Afterwards, when, frankly speaking, it was all too late, various agencies would compare their reports containing descriptions of this man. Their juxtaposition cannot help but amaze. Thus, the first states that the man was short, had gold teeth, and limped on his right foot. The second, that the man was of enormous height, had platinum crowns, and limped on his left foot. The third informs laconically that the man had no distinguishing characteristics. One must admit that not a single one of these descriptions is even marginally useful. First things first, the man in question did not limp.